Rose, just while we were getting ready there, a group of people came through the space. They saw the caption on the wall, knew that there was supposed to be something here, but couldn't find it. And then suddenly one of them saw on the ceiling that your piece is up there. It's called God Kennel, and it's a dog kennel painted brown, stuck upside down onto the ceiling. Was that sense of surprise and pleasure that they found something that was important to you when you conceived the work?
Yes, I wanted something that was the antithesis of Chisenhale. I don't know if you saw the Chisenhale piece, but at Chisenhale I felt I was in the role of playing God, trying to control nature almost, trying to control steam by the use of an air curtain. And for documentary, I wanted to do something that was, in every respect, the opposite, like it was small, modest, made out of materials that were easily accessible, and yet it was talking about the monumental. So it was something very discreet, talking about something very large. And in some ways, Chisenhale was something monumental, talking about the monumental. So
there's a very strong contrast between those two pieces. The Chisenhale show was a one-person show. It's a nice large space that you have total control of. The work that you made, as you say, was quite a major piece physically, this large area, this kind of bed from which steam was coming, and then the large air curtain that was keeping it contained, blowing down from the top. And yet here, the show itself is huge, I mean, massive international show. How was this kind of, as it were, this smallness, almost the smallness of gesture that you're making here in dealing with that? Was that a kind of strategy that you felt was necessary to adopt with something so big?
It wasn't exactly a strategy. It just seemed right in relation to the development of my work, and it suddenly seemed actually right in relation to what was going on here. I mean, next door we have this huge gallery space with a large variety of work in, and the other side as well. And I felt that this was like a space in between things, where people could stop and almost take a breather and have something that didn't demand in the same way that other things are demanding. So it was a combination of feeling that it was the right thing to do in terms of where my work was going, but also realizing that somehow or other it had a reason in this context to be as discreet. And almost I quite like the fact that people might miss it, and then somebody might say over lunch, oh, did you see that piece? Oh, no, you know, I walked through that room.
Just in terms of the way that the viewer approaches it, it's quite an interesting juxtaposition in that you're coming out of this hall, as you say, that has a lot of work in it, and you're in fact dropping through this space in order to get out the other side. And as you physically go down, what your sight is supposed to do is to go up again. There's a nice kind of opposition in play there.
If you see it as you come through the doorway, then you've got this strange thing, which is almost like a kind of guillotine above the door in front of you, which is quite a kind of ominous image. I mean, you might not see it, but if you do see it, then it's quite a kind of threatening image.
Yeah. You've said, in terms of where your work is going, what do you mean by that? I mean, do you have an idea of where it's going in particular?
No, I don't have an idea of where it was going, but I think with Chisenhale there was 9 months of preparation. I made a prototype. We had to work on something that actually technically had never been done before. So there was a lot of technology, a lot of preparation, and we didn't even know until really 2 days before the show started that it was going to work properly on that scale, because we made the prototype and that was okay, but to blow it up is another story. And so in a way I wanted this to in technical terms to be so simple it was almost like, you know, it could have been made in a very short period of time and made out of materials that were very accessible, could be made by anybody. But I wanted it to also contain something, as I said, that was a suggestion of something that was equally as monumental and equally as undefined, like, you know, God, what does God mean? I mean, people think in terms of God as something to do with religion, whereas I think in terms of God perhaps being to do with something that is more of an intelligence and a kind of cosmic intelligence that we all contribute to. But that's another interpretation of God. So this hole in the kennel is an area of speculation, like what is in there, what could be in there. And that seemed to be very important. So I didn't really want it to be with anything else, because I wanted people to, they have sufficient knowledge of what God might be in terms of their religion or in terms of their culture, to step back and look up and question how that's being pitched. I mean, the fact that I switched dog and God around is taking a very lowly animal and equating that with God. And so there's a confusion and a playing around of images through that.
Does that group of themes, the idea of kind of power and the relationship between you as the maker and the people who are looking at the space and how it's been dealt with and so on, would that also relate back to earlier work? I'm thinking of the piece you did at Max Gallery, for example, of the sunflowers.
I think power has always been a part of my work. With Glory, for instance, that was very much where I made a blitzkrieg on a table in a room upstairs at the Serpentine. Power and who holds the power is a very important part of the work. Not that something I build into the work, it's almost that something that comes into the work as a necessary ingredient. And I think it's something that I'm always questioning. And questioning from the point of view of being a woman too, because I think it's an issue that women have to deal with perhaps more in terms of where they're situated in the art world and when they get included in events like this, which are predominantly male exhibitions. The power question comes in again, but I have to stress it isn't an ingredient I put into the work. It's something that comes through each time.
It's there. You've referred to scale, and in fact we've heard various people talk about works in Documenta, and in fact the small scale of a number of pieces. And I wonder if you could just elaborate a little on the idea of scale.
I think the thing about the scale is that each piece is related to the space. For instance, I made a model of Chisenhale. I spent 9 months working on the prototype. The piece for Chisenhale grew out of my desire to heat the space. It's a very cold space, and it's a dark space. And I wanted to use a material that animated that space and almost made it breathe. Whereas here, I wanted to use the height and the fact that this space is elongated, in a sense, and that it's sandwiched between two large spaces. So really the scale and the materials and the work grows out of my response to the building or the room in which I find myself.
The piece was made then specifically for this space.
That's right, yeah.
Architecturally, it's almost like a ravine between the two different blocks of the building. And in fact, where we're standing against the outer wall, it's just a window which runs from floor right up to the ceiling, which is over two stories. So you're absolutely you get that sense of being forced upwards anyway as you come in.
I think one of the things about this space that's really important and that I had to respect was the fact that I'd already got imagery that was very powerful out there. I'd already got a landscape that was something that people would want to look at. So whatever I put in here had to in some way relate to that landscape. Originally, I wanted to cut a negative of the God Kennel into the floor, but I wasn't able to do that. The organisers didn't actually want me to cut into the floor for financial reasons. So, and I felt that this space, you could either put paintings on the wall, but you couldn't put anything on the floor, because as soon as people came down the staircase, they needed to look at the imagery outside. So the kennel is positioned in relation to, is actually talking about that, is throwing you back outside too. So the opening, the door there, is throwing you back to the door here.
You obviously identified, or this space was identified earlier on.
Yes, I came here and chose the space for the reasons that I've already said.
Mm-hmm. Now back in the Fredericianum, I'm standing in the video installation by Stan Douglas. In an otherwise empty room, a screen just under 3 metres by 2 is suspended, onto which is projected a film shot in Paris by Douglas in 1968 of four black musicians in a free improvised jazz session. Next, we hear Brian Mulvihill, a Canadian artist and critic.
So what do you think of this documentary?
It's got its strong points, as they all. Some have a strong point, some have it's not the one last time, and after the boys, and it's hard to follow that act, as it were.
So have you come as an artist to see it, or are you writing about it?
All of those, yes.
But is there anything in particular that identifies this documentary, do you think, compared to others?
This is the beginning of the 90s, and it's very diversified, and perhaps that's how the 90s are going to be. And there's a lot of toilet art in this one, and
elaborate.
Well, there's many works that refer to. I mean, this work here has some toilet reference, and there's a lot. And actually, this is a work of Attila Richard Lukacs, and he has a beautiful tea house, which is past the in the garden, just on the edge of the garden, and it's a work with that's painted, and it's a demise of the public facilities that are increasingly disappearing in the world. So, and he has another a pavilion, a small, it's like a public toilet in the garden, but it's a beautiful. You must see it. It's painted, and it's like a classical old one that you'd find in Berlin in turn of the century.
When you say this work, you mean with this gorilla stuff,
this gorilla stuff, and this Alsatian? Dog and, yes, and these friends that he's carrying. And,
is it, a sort of a narrative, a jokey narrative, do you think? Or
I would say a joke. It's quite serious. There's a tank under the foot of the bear. And, you know, often Canadians are known in Berlin, particularly, as grizzly bears. And we're not as refined and elegant and etc. as our Berlin friends, and so and some of our Canadian friends who come to visit have become known as the Grizzly Bear Manor School. Or so
there are a lot of Canadian artists in this show.
There are a number, yes. But there's a lot of artists from everywhere, and it could be a lot more artists from. I think I've just come now from a show that showed the artists from Taiwan and China and India and South Korea and etc. And there's not much of that. You know, the 20th century happened everywhere on the planet, and that world has been ignored. Canada, United States, Japan, we get included in those things, but really it should be the rest of the world also. I feel that's where it's really weak, and that the particularly now after the Gulf War, and now that we are all under one system, as it were, that it's time to recognize the rest of the world and to acknowledge that the 20th century did happen, the industrial revolution, as it were, went every direction, and that all those communities have an art that speaks about that. So
you think that's something that's maybe...
That's something that's very weak in this show, and I know that there was an attempt. There's Bhupen Kakar, he's an artist from India, from Baroda. His work is included here, but it's only a tokenism, and really it's time that Europe, particularly, Europe's one of the last parts of the world that hasn't seen itself from the outside. And it's time that it did that, or it realized that there is other views, and that the 20th century context happened everywhere, and that we must all, through art, we can begin to know each other, and that will help the world situation rather than having the...
What about the artist who's made this like a piano bar here?
Yes, this is Vera Frankel, and she's had a long experience. You know, in Canada, we've had a big experience of video as an art form. Video is really a public form in that it's television and it's the relationship of media to the immediate situation, often in a bar or in a public place, in the tube or at home or amongst one's friends, you watch television, and this recreates a situation of that kind of situation. So it's not just the work on the television itself, it's actually the social environment that creates. And it's an intimate one, and it's a small one, and yet it's not impersonal. Television's often done as a community, and particularly these days, most people's relationship is through the television. Their relationship with the world, and particularly the rest of the world, is through television.
Carson, we're in Documenta 9 now, and we've all had an opportunity to look at it and absorb what we see. What do you think of it so far?
I feel really angry about it and upset what has been done, and can't quite understand how it could have happened that way. You know, with all the time that was there to prepare it, with all the resources that were given to it, it's unmemorable, it's lacking focus, it's lacking really commitment to the artist. It's just deeply disappointing.
Can you sort of elaborate on that? I mean, you're saying it's extremely disappointing.
I think we have to discuss that on two levels. One is about the number and selection of artists individually, which can always be discussed forever. But I think in this case, what a lot of people feel is that a very low percentage of things are actually really good. And I think the number of artists, 210 or 217, is too high. On the other level that we need to discuss is the lack of a concept which might tie the whole thing together. So even if you have very different artists in it, a theme might link the whole thing and give it a structure. And in this case, you're lacking both. You're lacking a high percentage of really good, interesting things and a concept, and the combination of the two is just fatal.
Is there a concept, is there a theme, is there an agenda, do you think, that could be applied at this moment in time?
No, I don't think so. You know, it's not like, I mean, the best recent documentary was 82 when Rudi Fuchs did it. And it was historically the right moment. There was a theme in the air. I don't think there is a theme in the air. So it would be the curator's responsibility, I think, to make a theme, even running the risk of excluding a lot of things quite consciously, just in order to narrow the band of things that could be included and looked at down. And he refused to do that. And when you read the catalog and when you read all the statements he has made, his concept is a non-concept, and it has failed. And but you know, even to discuss it is difficult, because whenever we discuss it in any way, all he will say is, well, I told you so, there is no concept. So it's sort of unassailable in a strange way. That makes it very frustrating. I don't know what all the critics are going to say about it, because he will just throw it all back at them.
And is it then, in a sense, an inevitable Documenta at this moment in time, 1992? Or do you think it didn't actually grasp an opportunity? And if so, what was the opportunity?
You see, I think in the end, any document is as good as the person that has been put in charge of it. And it just happens that sometimes people get better or worse historical circumstances. And okay, Rudi Fuchs had better circumstances, but he was also a brilliant critic. You know, it's like, what would be the equivalent? I would say it's about having thought, which is the historical context, and being able to verbally express them. That's what the critic does. And Fuchs had the material, and he knew how to express it. Well, this guy, you know, can't express it and didn't have the material either. Now, if somebody really brilliant had come, you could have made a theme out of that. And it would have been a bit, it needed a bit more intellectual involvement to just say, well, there isn't a concept. I mean, a non-concept carried through credibly needed more than just that statement, and he failed. Mm. And, you know, so we're all sitting here and feeling deeply frustrated and pissed off and angry, and it's very sad.
Becoming more localized, I mean, how do you think it serves the British selection? How does it serve the British artists that have been selected? I mean, is there a logic
there?
Well,
I think there's it's a well-known fact that Jan Hood dislikes London and dislikes England, and I think that comes out very, very clearly in the selection. You know, I mean, it doesn't take very much to get Francis Bacon in. And he was selected before he was dead, so we give him the credit for that. And the rest, I think, is... Well, you know, there wasn't a selection. I mean, you just picked the most obvious stuff. But that's what the documentary suffers from generally anyway, you know. It's that it's either the most obvious stuff or it's all his friends. And the whole middle ground, by refusing to narrow down the theme of it, he can't judge and therefore left out. I mean, there's a logic to it, but it's a sort of tragic logic.
Is there any sense of the ground being cleared now, a way for, you know, what happens next, the next documenta, and perhaps Europe in terms of contemporary art? I mean, has there been some sense of clearing away a lot of history in this documenta?
I didn't think it cleared away anything, because it didn't, you know, it didn't address any real issues. So, I mean, the only thing you can say about it, yes, there will be another documentary, and we will all forget about this the moment we are on our way to the airport. But it didn't do any work. I think what we will probably discover in the future is there will be a gap, and there will be this failure.
Yeah. If you invite a curator, though, from Belgium, I mean, or anywhere, I mean, you are actually inviting an idiosyncratic selection, aren't you? So then it gives an individual a mandate, really, to do what it is they want. So maybe this kind of scrutiny could be described as not relevant to what they set out to do, their purpose, which is where we started the discussion.
Well, they must have selected him for one reason or another, and, you know, he runs a very good museum, and he has a reputation, and I think, well, judging by the prehistory of it, you know, he started off with a list of 70 artists, and then I think he just lost his cool, and he totally panicked, and the thing started mushrooming out in all directions. So, he just lost his nerve.
Okay. Are there... I mean, having said all that, are there any individual instances in the documenta, though, that for you are important? Any works, any installations, any parts of the whole exhibition? Because there are a lot of artists in it, as you say.
Yeah, but, I mean, if I had a ground plan now, I could pick out a few 20 works which I find incredible and memorable and would like... and will definitely remember... but to then have to go through a total of 200 entries to find those, that's a bit, you know, that ratio isn't quite
right. How
we would like things to be.
But you haven't come away from looking at the displays with a few artists' works that really have impressed you and made a deep impression, or have you?
No, I think... in the end, not, and I think that's unfair on those 20 artists. I think they were all just swamped by this drowned source of, you know, kind of non-entities and things which were just plain annoying. And, you know, even the good things, what I think he showed such blatant disrespect what those artists did, it undermined those great positions. I mean, you know, from... putting one of those stupid Fabry hands into the room with the Kellys to the, I think the kind of big scandal which is sort of symptomatic for the whole document is the Bryce Martin room, where if anything those three paintings would have been on their own, but to stick them in there with three other artists, that was pretty devastating.
Does it? I mean, does all this raise an issue about the future of an international large-scale exhibition of this sort? I mean, do you think it can ever be somehow made in a way that's going to be satisfactory and purposeful? Or are we seeing, in a way, the demise of an event of this sort?
I don't think... No, I think there were always people who want to give it another try. And then don't forget, the art world has a really short memory. So those disasters are usually just edited out and everybody forgets about it. And occasionally you get a great show. You know, and that's... They become sort of historical benchmarks. And the garbage we just all forget. That's the beautiful thing about history, I suppose, that it just sort of has that self-cleansing effect. Things just fall by the wayside. And this definitely will.